7. The face on Bella's wall was that of a young man, skin pulled tight to the bones by gravity. Padded restraints locked his head into immobility. What could be seen of his surroundings was red-lit and unfocused, perforated foam steel bulkheads, a tangle of circulation pipes, screens burbling with text and schematics. Under his cross-buckled seat restraints, the young man wore a suit jacket over a white roll-neck sweater. Coloured ribbons and metal insignia offset the jacket's dark material. The young man had short black hair, neatly side-combed and gleaming, as if he had washed and gelled it just before making this broadcast. "Greetings to captain and crew of commercial vehicle Rockhopper," said the face on Bella's wall. "This is Commander Wang Zhanmin of exploratory space vessel Shenzhou 5, on behalf of the People's Democratic Republic of Greater China. It is my great honor to extend the hand of friendship on behalf of my nation. Please, honored crew of commercial vehicle Rockhopper, accept offer of Chinese people to join in mutual exploration of Janus Anomaly." Bella stopped the recording. "It's the same as the last time. Not exactly the same wording, but the sentiments haven't changed." "I like the way he emphasizes the commercial bit," Craig Schrope said, as if he didn't know that this was a UEE mission with full diplomatic sanction. "The kid's just following a script, saying what Beijing told him to say," Bella said. "Look at it from their angle. Why should they recognize our official status if we don't recognize theirs?" "Because China is a rogue state and we're a full member of the Council. That's good enough for me." Bella wondered how much the strain was showing. She had still not spoken to Schrope about the second piece of evidence Svetlana had brought to her attention, and that omission was eating away at her. She wondered about what would happen when she received a follow-up reply from home, as she had requested. She had hoped, guiltily, that the Chinese matter would resolve itself and leave her with only that one major problem to deal with. Unfortunately, Beijing's beautiful creation, with its staggered, subtly pagoda-like lines, continued to function flawlessly. The fusion engine had been notched up to a fearful 2 Gs, which would permit an even longer study window. Had the race been equal, with Rockhopper and the Shenzhou 5 starting the run to Janus from the same position, there was no doubt that the Chinese would have been the clear victors. Already the Shenzhou 5 had come within 5 light minutes of Rockhopper, no distance at all out in the long empty light hours beyond the Kuiper Cliff. They would have to come closer, too, as both ships converged on the same target. "You may as well hear the rest of it," Bella said. "I'll pass. Do we ever get to see anyone else, or is it always this one kid?" "Just Wang," Bella said. "Maybe he's the only one Beijing trusts to talk to us. We still don't know exactly how many people they've got aboard that thing. The Chinese are talking as if there are dozens, but that might be an exaggeration." "Doesn't matter anyway. We only need one of them to understand our response." "No one's discussed a response," Bella said. "It isn't for us to decide who gets to crawl over Janus." "That's the point. We don't have to decide. The UEE has decided for us. They've given us the mandate." "Come on, Craig." Bella looked at him reasonably, trying to crack the poker face of the man who had broken the Shalbatana boar. "You know what that really means? It means Wang the man can take his ball home." "No, it means Powell pulled strings in Niagara Falls. He said as much himself. You know how tight he is with Inga de Jong." "Deep Shaft has a seat on the Security Council," Schrope said, with pedantic slowness. "It's not exactly breaking news that Powell has some leverage in UEE affairs." "I think it goes a bit deeper than that," Bella said. "I think Powell knew how hot a commercial opportunity Janus was going to be. Maybe we're flying under a flag of convenience now, but do you think anyone's really going to care about that when we head back home with our cargo bay full of world-changing technologies?" "So we get a bite of the big cherry." Schrope shrugged in his best no-big-deal way. "In case you've forgotten, it's a cherry that could very well kill us. We're taking a risk here. I suggest you point the greed finger somewhere else." "I'm not pointing the..." Bella trailed off, wary of losing it with Schrope. He was her subordinate, so she was entitled to cuff him down. but something always held her back. Schrope had strong political connections within the company that ran all the way to Paul Kagan. After his good work in Shalbatana, in spite of all the enemies he had made, Schrope was the new golden boy. Bella had links to Kagan too, but hers were of a different kind. Perhaps they even worked against her. Before Rockhopper, even before Garrison, she had been Kagan's favorite. She had pushed hard on doors, but Kagan had made them open for her. He had helped her rise fast in the organization, faster than could be accounted for by any measure of skill or ambition, neither of which Bella lacked, and she had believed that this was all there was to it, and there would not be a price to be paid. She knew now that there was always a price. Nothing that looked good was ever free, especially where men like Paul Kagan were involved. He had wanted more than just a talented protege. He had sucked Bella into a sexual relationship that she had been naive enough, even at the age of 30, to believe was the real thing. Kagan was 22 years older than her, and an exceptionally wealthy man. For a year she had shared the luminous glamour of his world, with its private jets and private islands. Then Kagan's wandering eye had strayed to someone younger, and Bella had found herself promoted off-Earth with no warning. One day the private jet took her to a launch complex instead of an island, and that had been that. Bella was in orbit before she realized what had happened. The promotion was a masterstroke. It was everything she had worked for up till then, and it was Kagan's way of getting her out of his life without having to feel a moment's guilt. At the time she had been too numb to feel hatred or sorrow. Instead she was ashamed and embarrassed that she had misread the rules of the game that were so childishly clear to everyone else. She never quite understood how she could have been the only one who hadn't known from the beginning that this was how it would, it must, end. Other men might have had problems with the idea of a spurned lover remaining in the same company, but Kagan's capacity for remorse didn't stretch that far. When they spoke, he appeared completely untroubled by their past. He would even occasionally allude to their time together with a nostalgic twinkle in his eye, assuming perhaps that Bella looked back on their liaison with the same rosy glow of retrospection, as if their separation had been a matter of dignified mutual consent. Losing Paul Kagan hadn't been the end of her life. Bella met Garrison not long after, and their few years together had been good times, right up until that sour end. Garrison she kept in her heart. Beyond a thin contempt, she felt nothing for Kagan. She had long ago vowed that her feelings would not impinge on their professional relationship. The CEO was an abstract figure who had nothing in common with the man who had so coldly disposed of her. For a long time that had worked. Running Rockhopper gave her a certain independence from company control. But Janus was changing all that. The UEE business was already more than she needed. Schrope had rotated aboard long before Janus hit the headlines, but Bella had had doubts about the real reason for his transfer from the start. Even if Kagan didn't particularly care about Bella one way or the other, he might want better things for his new protégé, and a captaincy wasn't out of the question. With his connections, Schrope could make life difficult for Bella if he chose. When she went out of her way to defend him, as she had done with Svetlana, it was as much to convince herself as anyone else. With Schrope, she always felt as if he was trying to make her say something she would later regret, something that would count against her in the minutes of a professional conduct tribunal. That was why she always bit her tongue when talking to him. So many things had been better before Jim Chisholm had fallen ill. Now, whenever she was about to fly off the handle with Schrope, she tried to imagine Jim sitting with her in the room, a warning look on his face. "All I'm saying," she said, as nicely as she could manage, "is why don't the Chinese deserve their own bite at the cherry?" "It's our call," Schrope said. "But why does the UEE get to decide on Janus? Last time I checked, Janus was an alien artifact. Maybe I skipped a line of small print, but I don't think there's anything in the charter that says Inga and her pals automatically get first dibs." "If that was a problem for the Chinese, they shouldn't have got themselves kicked out of the club for messing around with stuff they didn't know how to handle." He sounded stern. The Chinese had kept on experimenting with nanotech, despite pressure from the other member economic entities, and eventually it had blown up in their faces. When twinkling grey mould ate half of Nanjing, China had been expelled from the UEE. Even now, there were lingering rumors of sabotage, that agents of those industrial concerns with a vested interest in preserving a world without nanotech had infiltrated the Nanjing facility and made the replicators go haywire. No one took that very seriously, but Bella could still not shake the feeling that the Chinese had been victimized in some subtle way. Although she did not necessarily approve of everything that they had done, and everything that they continued to do outside UEE control, she could not bring herself to loathe them for wanting to take a look at Janus as well. It seemed perfectly human to her. "Look," she said, "if nothing goes wrong with their ship, they're going to get there whether we like it or not. Since that's going to happen anyway, maybe we should at least consider the possibility of cooperation." "They can cooperate by keeping the hell away from us," Shrope said. "Or do I need to remind you about the exclusion zone?" "It's 1 light second wide," Bella said, exasperated. "It's a legalistic abstraction that no one actually takes seriously." "It's still a line in the sand. The moment they cross that..." "What?" She had a sudden sinking feeling. "We're entitled to a robust response. You know perfectly well that we're capable of giving one." On the 14th day, 1 week away from the Janus encounter, Paul Kagan's face reappeared on Bella's flexi. Wherever the CEO was calling from now was white with intense, heart-wrenching light, bleeding the color from the day. He sat outside at a white table on a white-walled veranda. The tops of blue-gray trees poked above the wall, and in the distance there were sun-parched, treeless mountains, blank, like bleached paper cutouts. "Bella," Kagan said, assuming an actorly calm, "forgive the intrusion, but I thought this too important to leave to plain text. If you are not alone, might I suggest that you excuse yourself? You should ensure that you and you alone are seeing this message." He spread his hands, then brought them back together, as if giving her time to pause the recording, but she was already in her quarters, secure and alone. "I'll continue when you give voice authorization." "Go on, Powell," she whispered. "What I have to impart is not entirely good news," Kagan said. In the unflattering noonday light, his skin had the same leathery quality as the surface of the flexi. Burnt a raw red, it was the only real color in the image. "But I'll start with the good news. 120 hours at Janus is still practical, provided you ditch the remaining mass drivers on the return leg. You'll be moving a little too fast to make orbit around Earth or Mars, but that won't be a problem. We can get your crew off Rockhopper with shuttles, and then use tugs to refuel her tanks for a slowdown. Frankly, though, we'll happily scupper Rockhopper. The old boat will have more than earned her keep by the time she brings you home." A thought formed in her head. "Why are you telling me this, Paul? I already know this." "So you don't need to worry about any of that," he said with a flicker of a smile. Then his tone turned grave. "But you do need to worry about Svetlana Bassegian." Bella narrowed her eyes as she mouthed the woman's name. "I don't know how delicately I can put this," Powell said, "but this whole business with the pressure measurements has opened a rather distressing can of worms. Now, I know Bassegian has a good track record, but something disturbing is still happening here. We think she may be undergoing some kind of..." And here Kagan hesitated, as if searching for the right words. But Bella knew him better than that. There was nothing spontaneous or unscripted about Paul Kagan. He found the words he had appeared to be searching for and continued. "It's some kind of stress-related episode, a crisis brought on by the pressure of the Janus mission. This all started after the death of Mike Takahashi, didn't it? The death of a colleague." He corrected himself. "The unpleasant death of a colleague. A death that was unavoidably linked to the mission itself. We all handle that sort of thing in different ways, Bella. Most of us pick up the pieces and get on with our jobs. And we go on doing that day in, day out, year after year, through death after death. But for some of us there comes a day when it happens, and suddenly we don't pick up the pieces. We become them. I'm afraid that's what appears to have happened to Svetlana Bassegian." "No," Bella said, as if that negation might in some way influence the message Kagan had recorded many hours earlier. "She's clearly been badly affected by the death," he said. "Her nerve has snapped, and she can't face going through with the rest of the mission. She can't back out, either. Nor, for that matter, can she admit the true nature of her problem. But the mind is a resourceful thing. When a psychological need exists, it finds ways and means." Kagan leaned back from whatever flexi or cam was capturing his speech. For a moment, Bella saw a stricken expression cloud his face, his features caught in a moment of disfiguring psychic stress. "This isn't easy," he said. "I'm not for 1 minute suggesting that any of this was premeditated or consciously engineered, but the evidence at our end is beyond dispute. Barsegian's version of events is not the truth. The data she claimed was from the buffer memory was data that she had falsified." "No," Bella said again. "It was vital to her that she find a way to undermine your confidence in the mission," Powell went on inexorably. "But there was no way to do that without creating a lie. As I say, I doubt that she was even aware of that motivation. She's probably quite sincere in her delusion, but the simple fact remains that she can no longer be trusted to execute her duties. In 7 days, you will be at Janus, Bella. You will be operating not just under the aegis of Deep Shaft, but also as an envoy of the United Economic Entities. You will be acting for all humankind. There can be no room for mistakes, no room for misjudgments. It is imperative that you reach your target with a crew in whom you can have absolute confidence. That means you have to act immediately. You can't wait until Barsegian makes another error. You have to remove her now, before things become worse. You must do so quickly and cleanly, so that you have time to restore operational structure, and morale, of course, before your arrival." Kagan shook his head regretfully. "If there were some way that I could have avoided sending this message, I would have. For what it's worth, I've also spoken to Craig Schrope. He's fully in the loop, but I know it will be different for you. I know you are friendly with Barsegian, that you like and trust her. I can only hope this necessary action does not damage that friendship." Kagan's message ended, and for a moment the flexi was silent. Then the incoming call icon popped up and Craig Schrope's face filled the display surface. "Bella," he said, "I take it you've heard from Powell." "Yes," she said, still numbed. "Then we need to talk." He came to her office. They sat looking at each other, waiting for the other to speak. The fish formed an anxious audience, crowding each other, darting around the tank with hyperactive attentiveness. Normally they would have been fed by now, but the strain of recent days had thrown Bella off her routine. She was neglecting the fish, neglecting herself. She felt a vortex of tension building and reaching out from her like a magnetic storm. "I'm not going to do this," Bella said flatly. "I'm not going to screw Svetlana just because she's raised concerns that Powell doesn't happen to like. No one's screwing anyone. We're just talking about the acquisition of facts. Facts first, then judgments. It's how I handled Shalbatana." "This isn't Shalbatana, Craig. This is my best friend we're talking about here." "Best friends run off the rails, too." "Not Sveta. I've never known anyone less likely to lose it." "It doesn't matter. I've seen enough psych evaluations to know that these things hit you out of the blue. In high-pressure careers, people sometimes crash and burn." He looked at her carefully. "Happens to the best of us." Bella blushed. She'd had no idea that Schrope knew anything about her own burnout episode. She imagined Jim Chisholm sitting across from her, willing her not to say something rash. "I had problems, but no one accused me of faking data." "I know, I know. I'm just saying, nobody's immune." He clicked the end of his pen, then tapped it against the table. "Okay, got a plan. We need to look at those numbers ourselves, independently of Svetlana. That'll mean getting someone from her team to cooperate with us." "What?" "Someone competent, but who doesn't have strong ties to Svetlana. I'm thinking someone who came on team during the last rotation."
"Why? What are you planning?"
"I'm thinking Meredith Bagley. Young kid, right? She's a company player. She knows ShipNet. She can get us those numbers. Then we'll have the facts." Bella, flustered. "I want to talk to Svetia first." He looked at her sadly. "Talking to Sveta now would be a serious mistake. She's too clever, too resourceful.
Talk to her if you absolutely must, but I'd advise strongly against it. I'm not sure why I need to remind you of this, Craig, but I'm the one running the ship.
Absolutely.
He suddenly looked abashed. Look, I'm sorry. Sometimes I catch myself sounding as if I'm trying to take over the show. It's insolent and inexcusable. It's just that on Mars I was given pretty much free rein to do what I wanted. The only person I answered to was Paul Kagan. It's a hard habit to break.
I understand, Bella said, but I urge you to put some effort in that direction.
I will, and I'm genuinely sorry. I only want to do the best by Deep Shaft.
Bella managed a smile. Everyone knows you did a good job on Mars. That's why I was happy to have you as my second. But this is a woman I've known and trusted for years. I won't treat her like a common criminal, and I won't see her humiliated in public. I'll make absolutely sure this entire matter is handled with maximum discretion. He looked at her encouragingly. Do you mind if I use your flexi?
Bella hesitated for a second, then slid the flexi across her desk. Shrope checked the duty roster, establishing that Meredith Bagley was awake. He placed the call, drumming his fingers against the desk while he waited for her to answer.
Meredith, she said brightly, as if she had been expecting someone else. What can I?
Bella leaned into the visual field of the flexi. Meredith, can you come to my office immediately? And make sure you don't speak to anyone on the way, Shrope added. She arrived within 2 minutes, her demeanor visibly fearful, as if expecting a reprimand. Bagley was a young addition to Svetlana's flight operations team, keen but nervous, still not fully meshed into the social matrix of the ship. She fiddled with her thick black hair, her eyes darting from Bella to Shrope and back again.
It's all right, Bella said. There's nothing to worry about, and you're not in any trouble. As a matter of fact, I'm more than happy with your performance.
We need you to do a job for us, Shrope said. It's simple and it won't take long. The car line's running today, isn't it?
We're still making some adjustments, Bagley began.
That's okay. We won't complain if the ride is a little rough. Shrope leaned over and consulted the duty roster again. He glanced at Bella. She should be sleeping now. This is as good a time as we're going to get.
Bagley looked at the two of them. She didn't ask who she was, but she must have had some inkling.
They left Bella's office and worked their way to the nearest car line access point. A car was already there, but Shrope took a moment to call up a schematic showing the positions of the other vehicles on the line.
Someone's in the sweatbox, he said. I was hoping we'd have the place to ourselves.
Using his flexi, he tried to get a picture from one of the sweatbox webcams, but the links were down.
I'll call ahead and ask them to leave, Bella said.
Actually, Shrope said, it might be better if we just showed up. He paused and added, just a suggestion.
They filled the 3-seat car and Shrope punched in their destination. The car took them down the spine at a slower than normal rate, easing to a crawl as it navigated the area where the worst damage had occurred. Then it picked up speed, passing the ruined mid-spine workshop and sinking between the 4 looming cylinders of the fuel tanks.
Bagley sat in the rear seat of the teardrop-shaped capsule. She said nothing during the entire journey.
As expected, another car was already on the line at the sweatbox end.
Bella's car slowed to a walking pace and nudged the other car forward until her vehicle was aligned with the airlock and they were able to disembark onto the titanium flooring. They were a kilometer nearer Rockhopper's stern than in Bella's office, with a good deal less shock-absorbing insulation between them and the engine. The floor rumbled, as if intense drilling work was taking place just a few meters below. Once more, Bella had that almost palpable feeling of the engine working ferociously. Shrope opened the inner airlock door to find that the sweatbox was already lit and warm. 2 figures turned around, surprised at the arrival of anyone else. Bella recognized them. Robert Unglis and Gabriela Ramos, long-serving crew members. In a crisis, their loyalty would lie with Svetlana.
Robert, Gabriela, she said by way of greeting, I'm really sorry, but something's come up. We're going to have to ask you to leave the sweatbox for a few minutes.
They looked at her with obvious affront. Their equipment spooled entrails of fiber optic line into the walls. Their flexies, spread out on the floor and folding tables, showed mind-numbing three-dimensional fuel flow diagrams, schematics that would have given Escher a headache.
"It'll only take a few minutes," Bella insisted.
"You've been given an order," Schrope said. "Put aside whatever you're doing and leave. There's a car outside. You can wait in it until we call you back in."
Anglis and Ramos knew better than to argue. They left their equipment where it was, still plugged in, and slid past Bella into the airlock. When the inner door had sealed itself, she said to Schrope, "I don't think they'll wait. I think they'll ride back to the Hab and wake up Svieta.
They'll be contravening an order.
They'll say they misunderstood. They'll say they didn't know you had authority to give orders."
Schrope snapped his fingers at Bagley. "I need a dump of the fuel pressure data in the memory buffer. You can do that, can't you?"
"Yes," Bagley said warily.
"Then get on it. Load the data into a clean partition on your flexi, then give the captain and me read-only privileges."
"I'm on it," Bagley said, fiddling with the flexi's data line.
Bella was glad that the woman knew what she had to do. She wanted to get this whole tawdry business out of the way as quickly as possible. She felt a momentary increase in the rumble through the floor, a shuddering reminder of the engine instabilities that occasionally shook the ship.
"What was that?"
"That was the car disengaging from the dock," Schrope said. "They're on their way up."
Svetlana splashed water on her face, sponged herself into some state of cleanliness, and slipped on her jogging pants. She fastened on her bra and reached for a fresh T-shirt. The one at the top of the pile was mud brown, with a cheaply printed copy of the Rock Hopper mascot on the front, that toothsome, grinning, drill-toting penguin that had now been censored from the hull of the ship. Her hand dithered, about to reach for another shirt. Then she said, "Fuck it," and put on the penguin anyway. She pushed her hair into shape and exited her quarters, leaving Parry room to wash and dress. Anglis was still waiting outside.
5 minutes ago, you said," she asked.
"More like 6 or 7 by now," he said.
"Did you ride the last car up the spine?"
"No,"
Anglis said. "There's another one down there."
Svetlana jogged around the curve of the corridor until she reached a viewing window set into what was currently the floor. She slid back the glare shield, exposing a pane of scuffed and ablation-mottled glass. She looked down along the length of the ship. A car was ascending the spine. Parry crouched next to her, his trademark cap already jammed into place.
"Are you ready to tell me what's happening?"
"What do you think?" she asked snidely. "We took our fears to Bella. This is the response."
"But you trust Bella?"
"I trust her. I don't trust Schrope. Schrope wins."
She stood up, and barefoot, she hadn't even had time to slip on her trainers, padded further along the corridor. Parry followed her, pushing his arms into the frayed sleeves of an old denim shirt.
"This could be anything," he said.
"Behind my back? I don't think so."
"Svieta, will you stop? You're acting as if this has already turned into a mutiny."
"My judgment has been questioned, doubted. That's good enough for me."
The car was just arriving when they reached the line. No one else was waiting at the airlock. Svetlana stationed herself by the inner door, arms folded as if she were the one about to dispense summary justice. Behind the inner door's dark window, the car slid up through the floor. Figures bustled into the lock. With no pressure to be equalized, there was no delay between the closing of the outer door and the opening of the inner one.
"Svieta,"
Bella said as their eyes met. To her credit, she barely blinked.
"Bella, nice to see you. Been anywhere I ought to know about?"
"You know where we've been," Craig Schrope said. "That's why you're here. I take it Anglis and Ramos tipped you off."
"No one tipped anyone off, and if I find that you've even looked at Robert or Gabriella..."
"You'll what?"
He looked amused. "Come on, I want to hear it. What will you do?"
"Never mind," Bella said, positioning herself between Svetlana and Schrope. "Let's keep this civil, shall we?"
"Can I go now?"
Meredith Bagley asked timidly.
"Yes,"
Bella said. "Thank you, Meredith."
"Whatever it is, you shouldn't have dragged her into it," Svetlana said. "You shouldn't have used her against me."
"I didn't drag her into anything. I asked her to do a job for me."
Bella glanced around. "Look, we can't talk here. Let's take this to my office."
"All of us?" Parry asked. No, not you, Shrope said. This is between us and Svetlana.
Then it's between you and me.
Shrope looked at him warningly. Don't clean out your options, Box, Boyce.
Or what? Parry asked.
Come on, Bella said. My office, Parry too. And let's all try to behave like professionals, shall we? In Bella's room they faced each other across the desk. Bella and Shrope on one side, Parry and Svetlana on the other. Bella slipped her flexi from her zip-up jacket and flattened it on the table, turning it to face Parry and Svetlana.
You know what this is about, I think, Sveta. I have a pretty good idea.
You brought an issue to me, Bella said. I listened to your argument and I consulted headquarters about it.
And they fed you a bullshit explanation.
So you said. That's why I decided I needed more help from home.
Oh, no, Svetlana said, with a sudden sinking feeling in her gut, as if the engine had just skipped a beat.
You didn't send it to them, did you? After everything I told you?
What else was I supposed to do?
You could have acted on it. You could have trusted me.
And scrubbed the most important mission in the entire history of spaceflight, a mission with UEE backing, a mission that the entire system is counting on to succeed, a mission that cannot be repeated. Give me a break, Sveta. This was never going to be an easy call. I can't believe you sent it to them. Of all the things you shouldn't have done.
Bella's tone turned strident. I took action on the basis of what you told me. I could have just dismissed it.
What did they say? Parry asked, still maintaining a semblance of calm.
They said... But Bella trailed off, unable to continue. Craig Shrope tapped his pen against the flexi. They said the data was faked.
That's what Sveta was telling you, Parry said.
No,
Shrope said. What they said was that Svetlana faked the evidence. There never was any smoking gun.
That can't be true, Parry said, looking to Svetlana for confirmation. Can it?
It is now, she said.
You can see it here, Shrope said, directing Parry's attention to the flexi. There's no difference between the two sets of pressure data. The information in the buffer matches the information on ShipNet.
But I saw it for myself, Parry said.
You saw something, Shrope said. It wasn't what you thought you were seeing.
Bella screwed up, Svetlana said. She felt faint, drained, knowing that nothing she could say now would make any real difference. Bella screwed up by sending them the buffer data.
Don't be silly, Shrope said firmly.
It must have been difficult for them to doctor those numbers, Svetlana said. But when I found the differences between the two data sets, they had no choice but to find a way. And you let them, Bella. You showed them the numbers. You drew their attention to the buffer.
You think Deep Shaft tampered with the buffer data as well? Bella asked.
They'd have found the way if it mattered enough.
She has a point, Parry said. If it made enough of a difference.
I think this has gone far enough, Shrope said, clicking his pen with judicial finality. For the record, Svetlana, Deep Shaft has already recommended your removal from duties. We could have acted on that recommendation immediately, but we thought we'd at least give you the benefit of the doubt.
Thanks, Guy.
We checked their story, Shrope continued. We checked their story because our instinct was to believe you, but you betrayed that trust, Svetlana. You let us down.
Oh, please.
Can't you see she's been set up? Parry said. She's done nothing wrong. Bella, you know Sveta better than this. You know she'd never betray you.
Bella's discomfort was obvious.
I'm sorry it has come to this, she said, but I have to take the evidence at face value.
She looked at Svetlana pleadingly.
I have to remove you from duty, Sveta. If I do anything other than that, I'll be in dereliction of my own duty as commander of this mission.
You don't have to justify your actions, Shrope said.
Craig, Bella said, shut the fuck up. This is between me and Sveta.
Don't do this, Svetlana said. Listen to me. Listen to me or we will all die.
I can't. I have no choice.
Then we're fucked. All of us.
When we get back home, Bella said, you have my word that there'll be a thorough inquiry. No stone will be left unturned. If the company has done this, then we'll find that evidence. We'll find someone who'll talk. Someone who'll vindicate you.
Don't you understand?
Svetlana said. If I'm right, we will never get back home.
Bella closed her eyes. We'll get back home, she said. Whatever happens, that's a promise.
Don't hate me for this, Bella said when they were alone. Do anything but that.
Svetlana looked at her from across the table. What she saw in Svetlana's eyes was much closer to stunned incomprehension than the self-righteous fury she had been expecting.
Then don't do this, she said softly. If our friendship means anything, don't do it.
I have no choice, Bella said unhappily. I can only go by the evidence. The evidence couldn't look much worse.
Bella stared hard into Svetlana's eyes, trying to make some final connection that would salvage their friendship.
But I meant what I said. When we get home, it won't happen.
I'm going to talk to Ryan Axford, Bella said, brightening, suddenly seeing a solution.
You had a bad accident out there. It's my understanding that you left Ryan's care before he authorized your discharge.
Really, you should still be in the medical center. The last few days shouldn't have happened. I don't think it'll be difficult for us to say that they never did.
She waited, hoping Svetlana would see the sense in her proposal. But Svetlana just shook her head with stubborn defiance.
My accident had nothing to do with this. You know that, so why pretend otherwise?
I'm only trying to help.
With maddening calm, Svetlana said, If you remove me from duty, it still won't alter the fact that we don't have enough fuel to make it back home.
I don't doubt for a minute that you believe that. The problem is that I can't have you going around telling everyone else. I have a ship to run, Sveta. I have a mission to complete. I've got planet fucking Earth looking over my shoulder waiting for me to screw up.
This is the screw-up.
Bella bridled, but by an immense effort of will she kept her temper.
If only it was that easy. I'm a 55-year-old woman, Sveta. I'm the commander of 50,000 metric tons of mining spacecraft. There are 145 people on this ship.
144, Svetlana said icily, unless you think Mike Takahashi still counts.
144, then, of whom a lot fewer than 72 are women. Things are better than they've ever been, Sveta, but we're still a minority. And as commander of this ship, I cannot for one second be seen to show the slightest leniency with anyone, most especially not someone who happens to be another woman, let alone a close personal friend.
So you make an example of me, just to show that you can be as tough and stubborn as any man?
Spare me the piety, Sveta. In my shoes you'd do exactly the same.
There was the tiniest flicker of agreement in Svetlana's face, an unguarded reaction that nonetheless said that, yes, in that regard Bella was right. But that did not make the thing itself right, the same look said.
Please reconsider, Bella. Give me time to prove this is real. Let me drill a pressure tap into one of the fuel tanks, get a direct measurement, anything.
I wish I could. I wish I believed you, but right now I don't. I don't think you're lying either. I think you're just
deluded.
I burnt out once, Sveta. I know how it happens. One minute you're just sailing along, the next you're in pieces. There's no shame in it. It doesn't make you a bad person.
Bella dared to think for a moment that her words had hit home, that Svetlana had realized that she was taking no pleasure in this, and that she felt a compassionate concern for her friend's well-being.
Then Svetlana said, This isn't about you and me, is it? It's about Paul Kagan.
I'm sorry, Bella responded mildly.
We all know what happened with you and Kagan, Bella. We all know you fucked him. We all know it's more than just business with the two of you.
Bella's face stung. In all their years of friendship, she had never once spoken of the affair with Kagan. She had assumed, with absolute certainty, that Svetlana knew nothing of it. But she now realized it had been there all along, like a weapon waiting to be drawn and used.
That was 25 years ago, she said, on the edge of tears.
But old habits die hard, right? You might not be fucking him now, but Paul still only has to say jump, and you say how high.
Don't say another word. Please,
don't say one more word. After all this time, you just can't face it, can you?
Face what?
The possibility that Kagan might not be the man you looked up to back then.
Bella moved to slap Svetlana across the cheek, but at the last moment she stayed her hand, even as Svetlana held up her own hand in defense.
"You shouldn't have said that," Bella said. "You really, really shouldn't have said that."